Apple doubles its market share in the laptop market and makes a pantload of cash in the process. Today is July 22nd, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. Now, before we get underway, I noticed the following comment in iTunes about last week's show. That was a show on poker politics, for anyone that might have missed it. Not specifically Mac or iPod related, but certainly internet related. And I figure since this show is delivered over the internet, it might be a topic of interest to the people that listen to it. So I happen to notice this comment at iTunes. I am unsubscribing after such a liberal diatribe for online gambling. Be objective and report the news, not your opinion. Okay, a couple of comments. First of all, I'm glad you're all with me this week. For anyone that made it through last week's show, I'm glad that you decided to tune in again this week. I hope that if I turned anyone off with last week's show, that you're still here and that you're going to still listen to the show. That was, as I said, kind of a digression for us. I think it's interesting every now and then to jump into other subject matter other than specifically Mac and iPod related stuff. And I am glad that those of you who survived through that week's show are back with me again this week. Second of all, I do want to point out that the Context Machine segments we do really does rely on the opinion or the opinions of my guests. When Jeff is here, when Brian is here, when Dave is here, they all have pretty strong opinions about politics, about economics, about certainly about products and about other things more directly related to the technology industry, about business. And they express those very clearly when they get on here. And there are several occasions when that happened, when Brian talked about DRM or when Jeff has talked about some lawsuits that have been out there, when Dave talked about sweatshop labor. We get into some stuff that can raise some hackles and get people pretty turned up. And that's fine as far as I'm concerned. That's one of the reasons I enjoy doing this show. And I do hope that everyone realizes this is all a matter of opinion and perspective to a certain degree. And I believe that when I have them on these shows, that they express their opinions in a way that's well-informed and that's constructive. I do try to ask questions if I feel like someone's kind of getting off on a thing. I do try and rein people back in, and I hope that you guys notice that and appreciate it. And I do also want to point out one final note on this, just because it did raise some hackles, apparently, last week's show. I will point out that I do disagree with Brian's assessment about this gambling bill in several respects. I agree with a lot of the comments he made. I disagree with some of them. One thing in particular, since this commenter happened to mention the liberal diatribe, I do think that Democrats share a tremendous amount of the responsibility for this bill. I agree with Brian that the bill is lousy. I agree that there are political motivations for it. The most obvious political motivation I see is that people want to distance themselves from Jack Abramoff. But Democrats share a lot of the blame in the success of this bill, along with Republicans. So if you have thoughts on this, seriously, if you have thoughts on any of the shows we do, want to make comments about them, send me emails. The email is roundup@macobserver.com. I love hearing from you guys. I love it when you guys get involved in this discussion. That's what podcasting is supposed to be about. So write in, tell me what you think. Tell Brian and Jeff and Dave and anybody else who comes on this show what you think, because that's what this is supposed to be about. So I'm glad that all of you are here. And with that, let's take the focus off of politics for a little while, and let's get back to business. To get the full story on anything we cover in this show, as usual, you can visit the show notes at macobserver.com/roundup. No, we really are back to business, specifically Apple's business. Apple Computer on Wednesday said that in the last quarter it earned a profit of $472 million on $4.37 billion in revenue. The company also said that 8.1 million iPods and 1.3 million Macs got sold. The quarter ending July 1st was the third of its 2006 fiscal year. No, there's no astonishing surprises here, really. In the show notes, I have a link to all of our coverage. We had extensive coverage of the conference call and of analyst comments and all that stuff. But there is an interesting nugget of information worth pointing out in all of this stuff. Apparently, the MacBook and the MacBook Pro are selling well enough to push Apple's take of the U.S. portable computer market in June up to 12%. That's units share, by the way, not dollars. 12 out of every 100 laptops sold are made by Apple. That's as opposed to 12 out of every 100 dollars being spent on laptops. So this is units. Apple's laptop market share was at 6% last January. Compare that to IDC Worldwide's quarterly PC tracker, which showed on Wednesday that Apple's overall market share in the U.S. reached 4.8% last quarter, also up, in this case, from 4.4% a year ago. Also compare Apple's sale of 1.3 million Macs to the 52 million computers shipped worldwide, and both of those numbers are worldwide numbers. So Apple's laptops are hot, but desktops are moving slowly and bringing Apple's overall market share down. Could that change when Apple transitions its final computer products, that would be the pro-level Power Mac and Xserve, to Intel processors? Well, for that, we need a little context, and in lieu of a full context machine segment this week, I'll digress from the news for just a moment. So, context machine on. Apple's laptop share doubled last quarter, but its overall share boosted by only about 10%. Now, that's not bad, but it's hardly a sea change. So, what's the road ahead here for Apple? Apple did say it believes that many creative professionals have been delaying purchases, waiting for both new machines and for Intel native versions of various pro applications like Photoshop, for example. Does that mean that after the new Pro Macs are released, that Apple's desktop share is going to double too? Of course not. Now, anyone who's followed the trajectory of Apple's market share over time, you realize that Apple's success with laptops, and they actually said this explicitly in the conference call, Apple's success with laptops is disproportionately skewed toward education and consumer-level customers. Now, those are precisely the users that are least likely to be interested in the pro-level Macs, the Power Mac and the Xserve. So the good news for Apple investors is that Apple was smart enough to transition its consumer-level products first, right? It transitioned its laptops, which are clearly its most popular products, and it transitioned the iMac and the Mac Mini early on so that it could get... so that it could get the maximum gain in market share as soon as possible, and presumably, therefore, get the maximum bang for its buck as soon as possible. The bad news for Apple investors is that we have very little reason to expect that there's going to be a further uproar going forward in terms of market share. Now, that said, there are some reasons for expecting good news and good adoption of these pro-level Macs when they come out. First of all, we know that people are delaying their purchases of pro-level Macs right now in anticipation of the Intel versions, which means implicitly that there is pent-up demand, that we are currently watching the build-up of demand because people are expecting these new things and they're waiting to buy them. So when they arrive, they'll buy them. That's a very common effect with Apple products. When people are expecting an upgrade, there's a pent-up demand that gets released as soon as the product is announced. So there's going to be a good product launch. I think everyone expects that. It's also, I might as well point out, I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people waiting on purchases for one of the new desktops. And we'll talk about that when it actually happens, which should be really fun to do on this show. Now, The second reason that I would point out that we have reason to believe that there is good news coming in terms of Mac desktop market share, which is the issue here. We're not talking about dollars. We're talking about market share. The second reason that I would point out, and this all comes with a lot of caution. The second reason is boot camp, along with every other effort that Apple makes to appeal to IT buyers at businesses, at universities, in government. Now, people write incessantly on this subject, and so I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on it. Suffice it to say that Apple very rarely goes out of its way for these people, for people who are buying for large organizations. And we know that Apple very rarely goes out of its way. But in many cases, power and capability and flexibility speak for themselves and cause people to buy these products even when Apple doesn't go out and court these customers. Incidentally, if you agree or disagree with that position, people have all kinds of opinions on whether or not that's a good thing for Apple to do. I'm not getting involved in that right now. I'm just recognizing the reality that Apple does not court large corporate, government, military, university customers in the same way that places like Dell, IBM, when it was still in the PC business, now Lenovo, and HP do. It's a completely different strategy, and whether you agree with it or not, that is the reality as far as we can tell. So, given that that is the reality, well, what could the adoption of these pro-level Macs be like? Well, the basic reality is that Apple will sell these pro-level Macs in larger numbers to organizations if it continues to make easy and cost-effective servers, easy to manage, cost-effective servers, if they're easy to wire up into superclusters, and we've heard about that on a number of occasions, that Xservs were uniquely inexpensive or easy to wire up into big superclusters. And if they can all run Windows, which is the thing unique to Intel Macs, that's a new thing. I suspect that at least some customers will really take a very serious look at Apple in a way that they didn't before. Now, there are still issues here. Apple, in order to make this a big deal, in order to make this something that produces big gains in market share, Apple is really going to have to change the way it relates to these customers. And again, people have written a great deal on this subject, and I won't belabor the point, but Apple is going to have to really push boot camp as a strategy, or even better, buy Parallels, which makes a non-dual booting solution, a solution that can run Windows, Linux simultaneously with a Mac OS without doing a reboot, and at very good speed as well. It's going to have to do one of those two things. It's going to have to start pre-installing Windows for its corporate clients, because corporate clients aren't going to want to buy a huge pile of computers and then have to install operating systems on them. That's a huge waste of time. And it's going to have to provide at least some limited Windows support to its customers. And if it were willing to do those things, which really fundamentally are not that big of a deal, if it were willing to do those things, it could significantly change its relationship with some of these customers. Now, I'm not saying that anyone's ever going to see an option on the consumer Apple store to put Windows on your Mac. There's no way that's going to happen, and the Mac will always be the first thing that opens up when you boot up a new Mac. But if they made the decision that with some large buyers, they were willing to pre-install Windows and provide some support, I suspect that that could turn a lot of heads. Now, that's for other people to write about in greater detail. Something to think about for now. For the time being, and by the way, if that ever does happen, that would be a pretty big change of direction for Apple, and we will spend at least a show on the subject. For now, the bottom line is that we can't assume that the release of the Intel Pro Level Max is really going to change a great deal if there are advances in market share. And there's every reason to expect that advances in market share will continue, that Apple will continue upgrading these products at a good clip. I'm talking about the consumer level products, the Mac Mini, the iMac, and the laptops, that Apple will continue to upgrade those at a good clip, that it will continue to market them aggressively as it has been, and that it will also have a parallel marketing push for the new version of Mac OS X. If all of those things happen, and there's every reason to expect that they will, Apple will continue to gain market share, but those market share gains will be due to its consumer level products, not due to the Pro Level Max. And the Pro Level Max are at least for the foreseeable future there to appeal to an installed base of professionals, people that use Final Cut, people that use Logic, people that use Photoshop, and so forth. So that's that. Contact machine off. And back to the news. Speaking of Intel processors, you can now expect quad-core Intel Max a little sooner than before. Intel is moving up its production schedule so that it can release the chips before the end of this year rather than in the first half of 2007. For more, including the specific product code names, you can find the story at macobserver.com/roundup. For the Intel watchers out there, the company reported a profit of $865 million US, less than half of the $2 billion it earned in the year-ago period. And before I move on, what the heck are these people's deal? I cannot believe this. In an exclusive interview with Billboard magazine, which will publish the news in its July 29th edition, Microsoft's Chris Stevenson apparently confirmed that the company plans to launch a portable music player along with an iTunes-like service under the code name, or under the actual name, Zune. All right, so Microsoft cannot possibly think that this is the right way to build hype. We've talked about this a couple of shows ago. Jeff was here. We were talking about how they were allowing leaks out about the product, and then they were denying that they had anything, or they were saying, we don't have anything to announce at this time, and there was a whole kind of back and forth with the press that kept this mythical music player in the news and was building hype for it, and it was pretty clear that they were in the process of doing it, but they weren't confirming it. And Jeff was saying, you know, this is not a bad way to bumble along to try and build hype for a product. Now they go and they confirm that the product is in development. It can't possibly be the way that you want to build hype. I will give them this. We're talking about it right now, which obviously is what Microsoft wants. But now that we know the answer to the question, what's to keep us talking about it next week? I know I won't be. So that's that. A nice thing about podcasting. I don't need to fill time, like, for example, on cable news. So this week's events didn't really merit a whole context machine interview, so I bagged it. No use in wasting your time, right? I'll finish up, as usual, with a quick product roundup. David Tare, I'm mispronouncing that, I'm sure, has released 1Password, a utility that integrates with the Mac OS X's keychain and saves passwords for use with Safari, Firefox, Camino, and Flock. Pricing is $30. Adonix Technologies announced the immediate availability of the Cipher UDD, a hardware-based system that encrypts and decrypts the contents of a flash-based media on the fly. That's actually kind of cool. The Cipher UDD is priced at $80 with 64-bit encryption or $125 with 128-bit encryption. Here's another product name another company name I don't know how to say, Merizon, announced the immediate availability of Cinematize 2 Pro for the Mac on Wednesday. The software lets you extract content from movie DVD discs for use in other applications like Final Cut, iMovie, and Keynote. Cinematize 2 Pro costs $130. Absolute Software announced the immediate availability of CompuTrace LoJack for laptops. For the Mac on Wednesday, the low jack for laptops software is compatible with PowerPC and Intel-based Macs and helps you track and locate your computer if it's stolen. The service costs $50 a year. Gamebrew announced the immediate availability of Rage of Magic 2 for the Mac on Monday. Rage of Magic 2 is an arcade-style fantasy adventure game for the Mac. The game costs $20. Red Marble Games has introduced Democracy, a political simulation in which the player starts the game as president or prime minister and takes his nation in any direction he wants, with the goal of keeping the citizens happy enough that they re-elect him. Pricing is $23. Otherworld Computing announced the immediate availability of a quad-interface version of the Mercury Elite AL Pro hard drive on Thursday. It includes FireWire 800 ports, two of them, one FireWire 400 port, one ESATA port, and one USB 2 port. It's available in capacities from 250 to 750 gigabytes and is priced starting at $200. And finally this week, Misha Sakularoplo reviews the Kuro Doc. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the weekly roundup. Our content is written by the good people at the Mag Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. The Portable Media and Podcast Expo is coming up in September, September 29th to 30th. Stay subscribed, everyone. Until next week, I'll see you online.